Damn it, Ajgai, you're a loose cannon. But you're the best we've got. Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for March 20th, 2009. I got the month right this time. I said February last week and we never fixed it. So
it was funny.
I hope no one was confused. Anyways, we have that. So welcome to the show, everybody. This is Mike Minotti with my brother Ajgai Minotti, as always. Hey, how's it going?
Oh, good.
You want to talk now, huh? You gonna interrupt me? How's it going?
Go ahead.
Tell me about your day.
It's fine.
That's good. How's it? You're in Pittsburgh, so once again, we're not in the same studio.
Right.
Studio. And joining us today is Craig Scribble Ostrin.
Hey, guys. I heard that's the typical witty intro.
It is. As developed by George, who was going to join us this week, but he's getting ready to go to GDC.
Indeed. He's trying to find one of those jobs.
Right. But
bastard.
He says he might be able to join us next week, and I think we got someone else lined up. I don't want to say who, but in case they have to drop out.
That's exciting. We'll actually have someone talking about a trade show who went to a trade show on the show.
Yeah. How about that?
That'd be cool.
Still my dream to go to E3 someday. Now that it sounds like they're bringing it back, right? Don't they have like 90% of the floor space?
Yeah, it's kind of getting to be a big deal again. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. I'll believe it when I see it. I wish it was in May again. That's the one thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I saw a news story about E3 coming back, and I saw Booth Babes, and I stopped reading.
You're not a fan?
No, not really.
You didn't like that big, over-bloated E3?
I mean, I've never been, but...
Well, me neither, but just from the spectator. I mean, didn't E3 seem like a bigger deal like in 2006 as opposed to the 2007, 2008 versions?
Yeah, but I'm a big fan of just spreading it out, you know?
Nah, I don't know. See, but like my high school buddies will tell you, who none of the which are into video games nearly as much as I am. During that 3-day period of E3, I literally celebrate it like a holiday.
This is true.
I was like,
I called him during the Nintendo press conference because I needed some measurements on something, and he was freaking out.
He's like, do you know when you're calling me? I mean, I was literally like Linus and the Great Pumpkin. Literally just going around and like speaking about how great it is that E3 is upon us.
Because nice.
I mean, usually the big day was the press conference day, which hasn't really gone away. But when the show's not as big, we see that they don't take it nearly as seriously. When was the last time Nintendo?
Well, it's
made
on TV now,
right? Well, yeah, but Nintendo hasn't made an exciting announcement for a while. I don't think
E3 is to blame for that.
Well, even Sony and Microsoft, they don't really make game announcements at E3 anymore. They just They show trailers and stuff of games we already know about. Like,
yeah.
And so, I think Sony showed that God of War 3 trailer, which was just, you know, Kratos and CG on a mountain talking about how angry he was. Yeah, that was great. Okay, so why don't we talk about today's show?
Yeah, that didn't take long to get derailed.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about, we're going to get to the news. We have MPDs, which is always fun here, and a bunch of other things. We got to fix some Bioshock 2 news, because everybody was fooled by
it. Yeah.
Everyone was fooled by that. It was weird. Because someone gave out all that false information about what Bioshock 2 was, and it sounded believable.
Yeah, it sounded good.
But this
sounds better, I think. So.
Yeah, it does. And I got the Game Informer with the cover story, so I can talk about that. Then we're going to go on to a Game of the Year, 1991.
Woo!
Yep, and another good year, so there'll be a lot to talk about there. Then I got the Great American Ajgai Gaming Quiz. Ready for you, Ajgai?
All right.
Once again, I'm trying... Skewing it a little easier. I don't know if this is easier than last week's. Last week's was your chance.
I know. I blew it.
Yeah, I know. But so then after that, we'll do our week in gaming. I beat Resident Evil 5, so I'll talk about that. Then we'll hit up the downloadable game releases, the weekly game releases. We'll look at the top 10 list of 401 Mania, which is Resident Evil themed. And that's going to be the show. So I know you want to start out with those MPDs like you usually do, so why don't you get to that?
Okay. So here are the February 2009 hardware sales. Unsurprisingly, the Wii at top again with 753,000 units sold.
That's a pretty good for February, huh?
Yeah, and well, here I have a point to make at the end. Let's see, Nintendo DS is at 588,000. The Xbox 360 at 391,000. The PS3 276. The PSP, $199, and the PS2 hanging on at $131. Interesting to note is that all these numbers are up from last month.
Except...
Which is kind of like...
Wait, they're all from last month. Go ahead.
Yeah, but it's weird. Like, you just think with everyone talking about the way the economy's going and everything, like, video games continue to see increase in sales, which is kind of strange.
But I heard that, at least for the big three consoles, that the PlayStation 3 is the only one to see a year-over-year decrease.
True.
I believe.
That is true. But. And, of course, everyone was curious to see if Killzone 2 would sell systems. So let's see where that lies in the software sales, shall we?
Okay.
Again, at the top is Wii Fit. And making a very strong showing in numbers 2 and 3 is Street Fighter 4, first in the 360 with 446K, and then on the PS3, not far behind with 403.
Very good numbers for Street Fighter 4. You think that series wouldn't be relevant anymore, but man, there
it is. And then I think, like, this is probably the closest we've seen in a multi-platform release as far as numbers go.
Yeah,
and my
definitely.
Guess would be is that I think a lot of people who are multi-platform opted for the PS3 version because of the D-pad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that is what really drove a lot of this, because so often I think 360 ports have advantages and things like lesser degree now, but like achievements and
user
just
base.
The fact that, yeah, user, exactly, like that's where your friends are. But I think for this game, it didn't matter as much. But here, let me continue. We got Wii Play, 386. Then there's Killzone 2 at number 5 with 323, which is pretty good
that's
considering
good.
How late in the month it came out.
Mm-hmm. Well, even still, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll have big March numbers as well. Mario Kart Wii at 263, Call of Duty World at War in the 360, Mario Kart DS, New Super Mario Brothers, and then Guitar Hero World Tour on the Wii, rounding out the list.
Now, you're still... There's those Nintendo games. Wii Fit, Wii Mario
Wii
Kart, Mario Kart DS, Wii Play, and New Super Mario Brothers. Those five games
just stop reporting on those in the list?
That's like one of the most interesting things, though. These games are still on there.
I know.
Like, some
Nintendo's,
2 to 3 years.
Nintendo's brilliant in that way, you know? They put out games that have legs, and then they keep marketing them, you know?
They don't have to make new games. They really don't.
It's crazy. I don't know. I don't know what to say about it. I mean, week after week, and when they're going to release the next game that'll be like that. Because Wii Music... that's already not on top 10 lists anymore. Wii Music didn't kind of live up to the Wii moniker as well. But you'll have that Wii Sports Island Resort whenever that comes out. And
which they're being very cagey about its release date now.
Yeah.
I don't think it's coming out this summer anymore, because, you know, the game looks really complicated.
That's what I was about. You think, is that game really that hard?
Yeah, seriously. Probably a production issue with the Wii Motion Plus adapters, I bet.
Yeah, I guess so.
I can't imagine that game's hard to make. I mean, they had it done at E3 last year. How much more different is it going to be than that?
Maybe the jet skis will have dolphins.
Oh, that'd be sweet. Okay, well, let's talk about BioShock 2 for real this time.
Okay, why don't you say what the rumor was last time for those who missed
it? Okay, so last week we were talking about all kind of crazy nonsense. You were going to play some guy whose daughter was kidnapped by the big sister to be turned into a little sister, and there's going to be co-op, and all this nonsense. That's pretty much all wrong.
Right. The other rumor was that there would be no big daddies in the game.
Oh, yeah, none at all, which... Whoops, you are actually playing as a Big Daddy, and not just any Big Daddy, the first Big Daddy. Mm-hmm. And being the prototype that he is actually able to use plasmids, so mm-hmm. he's a bit unique.
I think besides that, he also just kind of has more of his humanity about him than the other Big Daddies.
Right.
I mean,
he has a little bit more cognizant choice, I guess.
Right.
So, like, I will say.
So this is a prequel?
No, it's
no,
not.
No. It takes place, what, 7 years?
10 years.
10 years, excuse me.
The old rumor was 7 years, though. It's 10 years after the first one. And what happens is, and I'll try to explain because I read that game former cover story, is basically one of the little sisters that escaped along with the main character from the other game has some sort of nervous breakdown. Basically, he goes back to Rapture, and she becomes the big sister, and she kind of, you know, makes it a goal to go kidnap little girls to bring back his little sisters to kind of get Rapture working again, essentially. So now, instead of like Fontaine or Andrew Ryan, you have this big sister who's basically in charge of Rapture. Now Rapture's kind of, again, a bizarre functioning society. Like, everyone's still messed up, crazy, batshit, but you know, it's working again. It's got its own systems and everything. And you play as the first big daddy. And I'm not sure exactly what your motivation is, but you're trying to stop the big sister. And
yeah.
And the way it works is, you know, you have all the abilities of a big daddy from the game. You have the drill, you can do that shoulder dash, you have a rail gun, and you can use plasmids. So, and also you can use both of them at the same time. It's not like before where you had to kind of equip one or the other, like a gun or the plasmid. You can kind of have both out at the same time. So you kind of like link those up and stuff like that. And
that's cool.
Yeah, and they try to make up for the fact that you obviously are more powerful than last time. So like one splicer's not a big of a threat, so there'll probably be more like waves of splicers.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, like the whole way it'll work is you can, with the little sisters, you can still harvest them for Adam, or you can, instead of saving, it's adopting. Where you then kind of play the role of a big daddy from the last game where, you know, you'll find corpses, they'll start harvesting, and then you have to hold off the splicers to try to attack her while she's right. harvesting.
But it's worth noting.
You still won't get as much Adam that way, though, as you would from just harvesting them.
But it's worth noting that's not the ends of adopting them. The ends of adopting them is to get them out of Rapture eventually. So there's right. a place you take them to so that they leave, and then you get Adam that way, too. So you're right. you don't, like, by the end of the game, have 9 little sisters with you that are, you know, all cut together.
Right, like freaking Pikmin or something.
Right, no, you kind of dispose of them as you would. And, you know, it's going to have all these new locales and stuff, and at one point you even, like, walk around underwater since you're a big daddy.
Which will be cool, I think.
Right. And, it all sounds really cool. Co-op is not there, which is fine.
No.
Fine for me, because that just seems like it would not work in Bioshock at all.
Right.
It'd probably work about as well as, you know, in a Resident Evil game. Oh!
Oh, no, he did it.
Okay, but... huh. Anyways, it is going to have multiplayer, which I already disapprove of.
Yeah, we'll see.
I remember when... My biggest fear is that this turns out like Metroid Prime. Where Metroid Prime was just too good of a game, and you made the sequel, and it just kind of didn't live up to it, and then it had an unnecessary multiplayer component tacked onto it.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. We'll hope. I don't know. Reading about it, I'm pretty psyched, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Also, I should note the Sea of Dreams subtitle is gone. It's just now Bioshock 2.
Which I also approve of. Sometimes I feel like everyone adds these unnecessary subtitles.
Yeah.
Sea of Dreams. But, no, I'm pretty pumped. I don't know. What do you think, there, Scribble? Did you like the first Bioshock?
I loved it. I just, I didn't finish it.
Whoops.
I do that with games I love all the time. Like Metroid Prime.
Yeah.
I never did get the good ending in Bioshock.
No, me neither.
Yeah, I mean, I like, when it first came out, I didn't have a 360 yet, so I was playing on my friends, and because I just couldn't wait. And I basically got to the part right before the big twist, and stopped playing for a while, picked it back up, like, a few months later, probably played for about 20 minutes past the twist and then put it down and never got back to it.
I think a lot of people did that. I mean, we're trying to be vague just in case you haven't played it, but like after that twist, it's kind of like, well, geez, where else can this go, really? Like, you feel like you already hit the best parts of the game, and you actually have.
Although the game does open up a bit after that, which is cool. I mean, I don't think the gameplay slows down a little bit. Like, I know a lot of people don't like some of the later sequences where you're escorting the little sisters, and then they don't like the boss fight. That was too much of, like, just a normal final boss fight.
Yeah, that was kind of bad.
Right. That was okay.
Yeah,
I think people... I prefer to no boss fight. Fable 2 says hello. but, I mean, I don't know. Bioshock 2 is going to have a lot to live up to for me. Because there's just memories from Bioshock 1. Like, just the first time you go into Rapture, seeing that, like, that one girl over her baby carriage off in the distance.
Oh, yeah. That was freaky.
Just all these singular moments. They're just going to be hard to individually top. But we'll see. I have high hopes. I really want to play through Bioshock 1 again soon now.
Yeah. It's on my shelf.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to finish that.
Yeah, you should get to that.
All right. Well, let's talk about the iPhone. On Tuesday, Apple had a press event at Cupertino to unveil the iPhone OS 3.0 with all kinds of exciting general things such as push notification applications and copy and paste. You know, very thrilling stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But there were a couple of notable announcements as far as iPhone gaming goes. For one, people are a little less excited about this one, is in-game DLC. And I don't think people would be as upset if, like, the examples that they chose to demonstrate this with weren't what they were. Because it should be noted, I'm going to give two examples that are not actually going to happen necessarily. It's just what they showed. One was, like, someone's playing some kind of space shoot 'em up game, and then, like, a thing pops up and it says, like, would you like to buy levels 13 through 20 for $1.99? It's like, no, I wouldn't. I'd like to just buy the game, thank you. The other one was Enji Moko showed off this really neat-looking first-person shooter, but the prompt that was up was, would you like to buy the rocket launcher for 99 cents? It's like, oh. And then, of course, I think they realized, whoops, because I read this press release on their site where he was very quick to point out, like, that's not necessarily part of the game. It was just demonstration. We had 2 weeks to put it together. We just need to show something. And I think what they're going to end up doing is, like, you can earn the rocket launcher, but if you'd rather skip the earning part, you can just buy it.
I never like that kind of bullshit, though.
I don't either, but... I don't have a problem with in-game DLC in an iPhone game. I just hope it's not abused like that.
Well, it's sort of like, you see that demonstration and it's like, have you guys learned nothing from the actual games industry in the last 5 years or so?
Like, right, they picked like the two worst possible examples.
But like, one thing they revealed is there are 40 million iPhones out there across the world that all these apps go to. And if you assume that even just 10% or even 1% of your market is that stupid to fall for this stuff, you're still making a pretty good chunk of change DLC like that.
It would be 1% of the maybe 10% market that has iPhones and is using these games.
That'd still be pretty good, I'm just saying. Time will tell, and consumer response will dictate what happens, so hopefully people aren't stupid. Another nice thing they revealed is you can finally do local multiplayer using the Bluetooth in the phone. So, like, some games kind of trick local multiplayer where you have to be on the same home network. But this will, like, if you're just in a car or something, two people can link up. And I know the NG Moko FPS game will use this. I imagine some games that have the kind of workaround local will get patched for it. And, brain farted. I forget.
Could we stop talking about iPhone games now?
Oh, yeah, here it is. It's coming out this summer. And, just like the last 2.0 update, if you have an iPod Touch, you have to pay $10 for it, which I think is really shitty. But they get away with it.
Who's going to stop him, Edge Guy?
What?
I said, who's going to stop him?
No one. They're Apple. They're untouchable.
They're untouchable.
Yeah. Okay, continuing with the trend of DLC, Steam now has support for in-game DLC. The first games to get it are The Maw and Far Cry 2. Which, again, people are, like, freaking out about this. And I'm like, it's pretty common at this point, just because Steam has it. And, like, I honestly don't think Valve's going to start charging for DLC for their games. I think it's more of a fact that the publishers who use Steam wanted it, and it was either, you know, get this in there, or they all go to, like, Impulse or Direct to Drive or something like that.
Are people freaking out about that already? Because, I mean, I don't know about Far Cry 2, but The Maw on Live Arcade already has, you know, levels that you can download for pay. Well,
that was like my rationale, but again, people, I think they just see Steam and DLC and just assume this means we're going to be paying for Team Fortress 2 maps or something. It'll be
so
fine.
People get her buying the mall.
Just calm down. Yeah. okay. Now here's something that's free and awesome. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the website Instant Action.
No.
They're kind of like one of those browser game sites, but like they have more kind of full 3D offerings.
And yeah, didn't they have that Tribes ripoff?
Yeah, well, no, it was made by the guys who made Tribes, so it's not a ripoff, it's an homage.
My bad.
But if that is your feeling, they are bringing the original Tribes to the service, enhanced and updated a bit, and playing in your web browser for free.
I want Tribes, wow. too. I'm not
Maybe
satisfied.
That's next.
I demand more.
You always do. BioWare has finally confirmed Mass Effect 2.
Oh man.
Even though we all knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Curiously enough though, it is only confirmed to launch on the PC and 360. A PS3 version is coming, but it will not be there day one, at least for now.
Did a PS3 version of the first one ever come out?
No, because the first one was actually published by Microsoft Game Studios before EA bought BioWare.
Right.
And really, that gives the 360 a big advantage going forward because, you know, like, your character will transfer. So, I mean, a lot of people, like, that game's audience is probably already 360 gamers. So I'm sure if they're multi-platform, again, they'll be picking up the 360 version.
Right.
But if you don't have a PS3, you might be interested in the new SKU that Target kind of lets slip. It is an 80-gigabyte system bundled with MotorStorm and Resistance for $3.99.
Wait, the original ones?
Yeah, so it's kind of like, thanks, but like, what about the two sequels that are better?
Are they?
And still no backwards compatibility.
Nope, it's still the same 80 gig that's out right now. It's just, I mean, they cannot afford to do a price drop. So the best they can do is try to continue plussing the value of the system, which they're still going on about that. I read the quote somewhere this week where some guy is still like, you know, we hope consumers realize the value of getting built-in Wi-Fi and a Blu-ray player. But it's just like, Sony doesn't seem to get or is not willing to admit that, I mean, yes, if you break it down like that, the PS3 is a better value. But people don't have $400 on hand, whereas they might have $200 on hand, and they're willing to trickle pay for all these upgrades because that's what they can afford right now and they want something. And adding software bundles like this is not going to help anything.
There's still a lot of people who keep calling for them to do the price drop, and then Sony's response is always just like, we really can't.
Yeah. Whoops.
Man, I feel
it's part of that 10-year plan.
Yeah. I saw some wonderful, wonderful comment on 1UP on the NPD story where some guy was rationalizing the numbers by basically multiplying the number of sales by the price and saying, well, actually, Sony's in pretty good shape.
Except that, don't they lose money on every console sold?
Yes.
That's very true.
I think about 20 people jumped on to shut him up.
Yeah.
Install base is much more important, so then people can buy games. And that's how you make money. Unless you're Nintendo. Then you can't make money off your system sales.
Well, you know, two GameCubes duct taped together is pretty easy to do, I guess.
That would be much bigger than a Wii.
I don't know, that duct tape's expensive.
That's true. Alright, let's talk about some silly people, shall we? Missouri cyber cop Andy Anderson, which is a great name.
Oh no!
Launched an investigative report into Animal Crossing, where he has concluded after extensive research that no adult should own this game. And okay, here's the quote: "There is no reason an adult should have Animal Crossing City Folk." According to reports, Anderson then went on to say that any adult playing such games are, quote, likely doing it for the wrong reasons, end quote. So we're not allowed to play Animal Crossing, because if we do, we're automatically sex offenders. Well, now, what I love is, in this guy's research, he would have come to the realization that the only way to communicate with someone in that game is to meet them in real life or through email or some other means, get their 16-digit Wii friend code, give them your 16-digit Wii friend code, enter it in, and then you can talk to them, I guess.
I imagine this guy's research is basically him, like, walking around Animal Crossing, being bored out of his mind, being like, there's no reason for anyone to play this game unless they want to be a sex offender.
I guess, because, that might be true, actually. I don't really know who, still, after 4 years of it, enjoys Animal Crossing anymore.
The same could be said for Home, though, honestly.
Yeah.
But just because, you know, Home is basically Animal Crossing's with less to do and better graphics.
Oh, well, actually, Michael, there's a lot to do in Home because
50 minutes,
they've had 4 million users who spend an average of 55 minutes. I'm sure a lot of that time is spent waiting for shit to download, but, you know, whatever counts.
You know, I just know better. They could give me any numbers they want. There is no way I am willing to believe that Home is going to be a long-term success. I just can't believe it.
No,
it's way too unappealing a product.
Well, I got a code to get a Hellgast costume for my Home avatar. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to walk around as a Hellgast. And it's just like, there's nothing to do. People are just standing there with a dance emote left on. Like, that's why there's 55 minutes. People probably put on a dance emote and go do something else.
It's a screensaver.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Who are these people that even do that?
And I still have not played bowling. For all I know, that could be the best bowling game ever, and I wouldn't know it.
It's not a bad bowling game.
Yeah, and I'm not willing to sit there and wait for a virtual bowling lane. I'm sorry, it's not happening.
But about the Wii story, I mean, as terrible and painful it is to read something so ignorant, you know, I just love that the most innocuous game in the world from Nintendo, who tries so hard to have the most complex online friend system, you know, is suddenly, it didn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. Just pedophile infestation.
That's right.
This guy's not getting anywhere with this, is he?
Oh, I hope not.
I mean, see, this is the problem where it's like so easy for people to look at this and like maybe agree with him. Because they'll look at him and be like, yeah, this is a kid's game. Adults can't play this. And, oh my God, they can talk to little boys on here. I see what you mean.
Well, it's like that one guy, I think we talked about it, when he was like doing something about the DS, about how, with its wireless functionality, a sex offender could drive up next to your car and talk to your child through this PictoChat application. And I was like, okay, so if the kid's in the back seat, happens to just have PictoChat turned on and is not doing anything else, some guy drives up next to your car, matches your speed, and while driving, gets out his DS, and the off chance there's a child in that car with PictoChat on, like, the odds of that are astronomical. That was on Fox News.
It's like... Well, that's Fox News.
Yeah.
But it's like, remember when people were saying that the PSP was a porn device? Because
because it had a web browser.
It's like people
and,
just...
And that article used the word... This was the quote from the article.
Pornable.
It magically pulls the internet through the air. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but the word magical in 2007 was used to describe wireless networking. It's magic, everybody. Ancient tomes of arcane knowledge are used to get the internet to our devices.
That's the problem. People don't understand that what the internet is, though. Like they really don't.
They really don't.
Like if you have something that has the internet, that doesn't, you can't automatically label it, you know, some sort of, you know, sex offender like
device,
like some sort of sex offender like superhero transmitter thing.
Oh God, just wait till the story gets out about, like, you know, porn on the iPhone or something.
Yeah, has no one discovered that yet?
Yeah, really?
But that's. I don't know. Just let's go move on.
Okay. So the Behemoth, the team behind Castle Crashers and Alien Hominid, have shown a trailer and some details for their third game, which does have a name. It looks
game
like some
three.
Kind of party game multiplayer collection.
It looks like they're making something that's going to take them less time to build because they probably got sick with Castle Crashers and long development.
Well, let's see. There's block painting, soccer, gold collecting, and soul collecting.
It looks fun.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I don't know. Those guys killed a lot of good faith with me when it took them 6 months to patch Castle Crashers.
I'm sorry, but this... I never had any online issues with Castle Crashers.
I know,
Crashers.
I know, apparently,
I'm in a minority, but I don't care. I have no issues with them, and I like their games. And even without... I mean, come on. Castle Crashers was a really solid product.
Yeah.
Ignore that for a while. It was the best beat-em-up we've had in a long time. And Alien Hominid's great, too.
Yeah, I mean, that game's good. I like it.
Okay.
All right. Ninja Gaiden Sigma 2 is coming to the PlayStation 3.
Is it going to have better... Go ahead.
I mean, the only reason I bring this up is to see, like, does this even matter?
Well, isn't it weird how... I mean, everyone was, you know, shitting themselves silly over Ninja Gaiden 1 about how good it was, and the sequel came out. No one really cared anymore.
Because it was the same game. It really didn't do anything different. Well, it didn't do anything to, like, improve.
Well, then it added a camera system that didn't work. Maybe they'll fix that for this.
Yeah, I don't know. I know one of the girls in Ninja Gaiden is going to be playable in this, but it's just like...
They always do that.
I feel like if that game didn't find much of an audience on the 360, it sure as shit isn't going to find one on the PS3.
I think it sold decently on 360.
It sold decently, but it wasn't like, oh my God, best game ever. Especially, like, to the degree that the original Ninja Gaiden was.
Mm-hmm.
My sense of
well, I mean, they resold. They sold like five different versions of Ninja Gaiden 1 over the last like 8 years or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Black Sigma and whatever else.
Xbox Original and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And our final story. This comes from Steve Shatila on the MTV Multiplayer blog. Apparently. As of October 1st, 2008, Sony started charging publishers 16 cents per gigabyte of all data that their products transferred on the PlayStation Network. If it was free content, this charge only lasted for 60 days, but if it was premium content, for every gigabyte of data, you had to pay 16 cents. So what this means is, for example, the Killzone 2 demo, I believe it is, had 2 million downloads. So that is a gigabyte demo... 16 cents. That's, what, $320,000?
Hmm.
I mean, they're first party, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's just, like, an example of them. Like, what was it? There was another demo that was a gig on the 360 that was 2 million. Oh, the Halo Wars demo.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, these demos do reach a large audience. And if you're a publisher who has to, you know, who wants to put out a demo for something on the PlayStation Network, That's now adding potentially, and you don't even know, you can't meter this. You could be adding $200,000 to your development cost.
That's kind of shady. We'll see how long that lasts.
And of course, like, you know, the difference here being is the PlayStation Network's free, so they put this charge on the developers and publishers, whereas on the 360, we're paying $50 a year, and Gold gets this stuff first, but the publishers don't have to pay anything. So it's like, you know, who should be paying for this stuff? The users, the publishers, it's... I mean, I could kind of see... I mean, obviously, someone has to pay for it, and Sony's not stupid. They're not going to pay for it for free.
Yeah.
It's just like... I mean, just even right now, the Call of Duty World at War demo is only on the 360, and just today, the Guitar Hero Metallica demo is only on the 360.
It just seems so backward, you know? Why would they do anything to discourage developers from wanting to work with them?
Exactly. I mean, that's what it comes down to, is if we have these cases where people are just going to put their demos in 360, that's exactly what it's doing. It just discourages publishers, it discourages buyers, it's bad all around. They need to figure out a better way of doing that.
Hmm. Yeah, well, is that the news then?
That is the news.
All right, why don't we move on to Game of the Year for 1991.
Okay.
Okay, so another good list here, another good year. I'm going to start off with Another World. Simmy's wanted to bring this up. This was a squad mission, actually, not too long ago.
Yep.
So you guys remember this. It's like that kind of like that realistic 2D platform, which kind of...
The rotoscoping.
Yeah, and it kind of like...
In the vein of Prince of Persia,
kind of. Prince of Persia, and also kind of the early Oddworld games will kind of follow in its path. So there's that. Battletoads came out for the NES.
Oh, God, the hardest game ever.
It was a hard game. But I remember in some magazine ad for it that it said it won Game of the Year somewhere. So someone gave it Game of the Year once. Yeah. I can remember this from when I was like 4 or whenever. I must have been 5 when that happened. Final Fantasy IV came out, which was the first Super Nintendo Final Fantasy. A lot of people kind of think of it as like the first great modern Final Fantasy in a lot of ways. I always kind of thought it was a bit overrated myself.
Is this when it came out in Japan or America?
In Japan. We're still doing Japanese release dates here.
Okay.
So this isn't the Final Fantasy II. Nick North wanted me to bring this up. Although he originally told me this was the American Final Fantasy III, and I just had to correct him and bring it up here.
you're such a jerk.
I know. Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past came out.
Yay!
Nick North and Zach wanted me to bring this up. So that's one of my favorite Zelda games. Definitely my favorite non-3D one.
Right.
So that had to be brought up. Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge.
Yay!
Arguably the best adventure game in the Monkey Island series. Arguably one of the best of all time. This is for me and you, AJ. Quackshot came out.
Yes! I love Quackshot.
I know. Who doesn't? So that was there. The Simpsons arcade game came out, which, again, is something I just wanted to throw up there, because I love that game. And I accidentally made everyone think it was coming out to Xbox Live Arcade one day via Twitter.
Oh, I know, you jerk. You got me all excited.
All I did was say, I said, the Simpsons arcade game, get that on Xbox Live Arcade now. When I said,
yeah, like you were telling me to go get it.
No, I was clearly talking.
It's there.
I was clearly talking to, like, Microsoft. Get that on there.
Oh, because they read your Twitter and we don't.
Did
Maybe
I say
if
get
you
that
had
from
at
there?
Replied Microsoft.
Yeah.
At Microsoft. Oh, I should have. Anyways,
Major Nelson.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sorry. Sonic the Hedgehog came out, the first one.
Oh.
I always kind of think this game's older. It's kind of weird to think that this game came out the same year as, like, Link to the Past.
Yeah, I think a lot of people assume it launched with the Genesis, because most people got their Genesis with the Sonic the Hedgehog bundle, but it's really not true.
Yeah, for a lot of people, the Genesis did launch in 1991 with this game.
Yeah.
I wonder how far the Genesis would have gone without Sonic the Hedgehog.
Not very.
Probably not. Super Castlevania IV, which is the Super Nintendo Castlevania, I wanted to throw up there because it's a fun game. Basically just more of the same from what Castlevania was doing at the time, but prettier. Toe Jam and Earl came out.
Word.
I always
one of the first great co-op experiences.
Yes. I always preferred the sequel, but I think I'm in a minority there. Okay, this is a big one. Street Fighter 2 came out. Yeah, Nick North wanted me to bring that one up. And this is pretty much the granddaddy for 2D fighting games, so.
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure someone will say, oh, there's something before it, but really, everything kind of followed in Street Fighter 2's path. And the first Civilization came out in Gren.
Ooh,
wanted me to bring that up. Yeah. Some people had some lists that they wanted me to bring up. Sword Guy wanted me to mention that. Riders, Legend of the Mystical Ninja, Ninja Gaiden Shadow, Hula Rula, Rockin' Cats, Shatterhand, and Kid Dracula came out.
I've heard of Kid Dracula and Ninja Gaiden. That's about it.
He specifically wanted me to look at the box art for Shatterhand, which was interesting. It was basically this very funny-looking guy punching something.
Oh, cool.
And then Simmy's wanted to bring up Utopia, which was an Amiga game. It's kind of an early colonizing game. And then another game called Magic Pockets, which it looks like a platform of sorts. I just want to say I always appreciate it when people give me links to like the games that they send me that they know I probably don't know about.
Right.
So thank you for that. So that's my list. You have anything you want to add, Scribble?
That was just Japanese releases, right?
Yeah, we're all good. People recommend things that, and if I don't put it on there, it's just because it's not conforming with whatever crazy system I'm following.
Yeah.
I can't be of much help. I was born 2 years earlier than 1991. So
you weren't playing games yet? What's wrong with you?
Not quite yet. I mean, I got I was a Genesis kid, but I got it like probably 3 or 4 years after it came out.
Yeah.
But I played a lot of like NES at my friend's house.
That's good.
But yeah. So, I was more into the Power Rangers Sega Genesis game at that time.
That was a good game.
Yeah.
It was a fighting game. You know, first thing I knew.
Just recently I was on Wikipedia trying to get my head around the lore of Power Rangers.
Oh.
It's so crazy because you know how it uses footage from a Japanese show, but like that Japanese show was in like, that show started in the 70s and it wasn't the first season of that it was using and it's just all confusing. The guy who played the Green Ranger was apparently in, like, it still kind of shows up every once in a while today, and I just...
Wow.
I don't know. It blew my mind trying to think about it. Alright. Anyways, back to this. Why don't we, okay, I think, for me, it's gonna be either Link to the Past, Monkey Island 2, Sonic the Hedgehog, or Street Fighter 2.
I would have even said Civilization as a potential.
Okay, if you want to throw Civ in there.
I think Civ 2 is probably where it got bigger, though.
Right. No, and Link to the Past...
I mean, Link to the Past is great, but it's really just a super polished refinement of the original Zelda.
Which I like a million times more, but at the same time, yeah, I don't give... Dang it, I liked Link to the Past a lot. Really, really well-crafted game, still holds up. But
I mean, honestly, I think you got to say Street Fighter 2. I mean, it basically created... what we know of as the 2D fighting genre. That's still the metric by what all new games are held to.
You know, I think I'm inclined to agree with you. I was thinking that whenever Monkey Island 2 showed up, I wanted to give it to it because I felt bad for not giving it to Monkey Island 1, but I can't.
But again, same thing. I mean, Monkey Island 2 is just a super refined version of Monkey Island 1.
Well, but yeah, we didn't give it to Monkey Island 1, though.
Yeah, I know.
And I want to get an adventure game and win one of these things eventually.
You're running out of time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm getting past the Gilded Age here. But I have a hard time disagreeing with you, because Street Fighter 2, especially in that period, is so relevant. And even today, like, 2D fighting games aren't completely gone. Even for a while, it seemed like 2D fighting games were going to be just taken over by 3D fighting games. And now they're, like, equal in popularity again.
Well, I think what happened was 3D fighting games got too complex. I mean, look at Virtua Fighter 5. That game bombed. It absolutely bombed because no one wants to learn a character with like a bajillion moves, and it's not like back in the day where it's like you have to throw fireballs and all that shit. It's just like different punch combos, It's like, what's the difference? And like, you know, people are talking about, oh, you got to count the number of frames. I'm like, what do you mean frames? Like, yeah, the frames animation, got to count them. I was like, there's 60 of those in a second. How are you supposed to do that? So you know, I think this return back to the more simple, pure, enjoyable gameplay where you know everyone knows how to throw a fireball. If you can do that, you can play Street Fighter 4 and have a great time with it.
Yeah, that was always my problem with the 3D fighter games. Just the massive move lists that you needed to memorize and practice and practice and practice. Whereas, you know, Street Fighter, I sort of like, Street Fighter is sort of like a, almost like Smash Brothers for me. You know, everyone has this, almost all the same moves, at least how you execute them. And then it's just a matter of learning when to use them, how to use them properly.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, I always get annoyed when someone asks me what a character's moves are in Street Fighter 4.
Guess. It's either do a quarter circle or charge him forward, then push, punch, or kick. You're going to do something.
And, I mean, there's just so much reaction in Street Fighter 2. I mean, Mortal Kombat right after it, and then all the other Capcom games, all the Neo Geo games that followed. So, I think I agree. Street Fighter 2 is probably game of the year 1991.
All right.
We all in agreement?
Word. Yep.
All right, it's done then. Okay, help me out here, guys. 86 was Legend of Zelda, the first one.
We really need to write these down.
Oh, it's much more fun if we try to just remember them. What was 87?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You were
Why don't you know?
Well, I do know.
Okay, then what was it?
In 1987, the game of the year was...
Was it Metal Gear?
Metal Gear. See, there you go. You just have to think. In 88, it was Mega Man 2. In 89, it was Tetris, I think. Yeah, yes. Tetris. 1990, it was, what was it last week?
So it was the last week, I can't remember.
Yeah, Super
was
Mario
it?
World.
Yeah.
Super Mario World, there we go. 1991 is Street Fighter 2. There we go, see?
Okay, I've written them down.
That's cheating. You don't bring it up unless we can't remember it, okay?
Okay, fine.
Oh, before we move on, I just want to add, I was just online doing a little research because I knew we were doing 1991 this week. And since I wasn't really around for 1991, I just hopped on Wikipedia a bit. And, apparently, id, Bungie, and, Blizzard were all started in 1991. So.
Wow.
There's a bit of gaming history for you.
Yeah, things are. This is an interesting time just because PC games seem to really be starting. And not only the Super Nintendo and Genesis still going, but, you know, the original Nintendo still is kind of kicking right here. I mean, you have Battletoads here, Mega Man 4 came out, and some other things. So, really, kind of a bizarre transition period we have here, especially with the development of those game companies, which are obviously going to be kind of big in the future.
Right.
So, interesting time. All right, so, 1992 is next. I wonder if that's when... The Super Metroid come out a little bit later. Then it wasn't it like 94.
I have no idea.
I wonder when that shows up because it's going to be hard to
actually
pass
play
that
it. Like I mean, I played it in like the late 90s, but I didn't play it like when it was new.
Yeah. Okay. We can move on from that and head on over to the quiz.
Oh boy.
So, five questions plus bonus question. All of these are based on games that were nominated in the list just a little bit ago. Scribble, you're allowed to help them out. If you get a question right, you get a gold star.
I'm not really sure how much I'm going to be able to help you with this one.
It's okay. We'll see what happens.
All right. Question the first. In Legend of Zelda lore, how much is a blue rupee worth?
5, right?
Yes, it's 5.
Yes.
All right, there you go. Number 2.
You weren't kidding about these being easy.
Yeah.
Rash.
I just like...
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I just like start second guessing myself. I'm like, he's got to be tricking me somehow.
No. I'm trying to get you to win one of these.
Okay.
But I don't want to. I'm not handing it to you.
Okay.
All right. Rash, Pimple, and Zitz are the three Battletoads.
Uh huh.
Which one was not a playable character in the original Battletoads?
Zitz.
I want to say Pimple, but.
Damn you! Why'd you say that? Okay.
They're both four-letter words. Pimple stands out.
Oh, that's a good call. Let's go with Pimple.
It is Pimple.
Yes.
Yes.
So I got to
get... Good rationalization. I like it.
I got to get Scribble. Yeah. Man, he gets 2 gold stars for that. His rational... That was amazing. The
that
other
was good.
Ones are four-letter words. Oh, man.
It's old-school logic.
That's nice.
Back when they didn't have room for all those digits and characters.
Not bad for someone who claimed not to be there. Number 3. At the end of Quackshot, what treasure does Donald find?
Oh, no.
This is your game.
I know.
You're going to remember
it
this
10
when
years.
I
know I will. I know I will.
It, but you're going to remember it.
It's some hoard of sorts. I don't know. Is it like the treasure of
it's
King
It's one
Midas?
Item. I'll tell you that.
Oh,
it's
just one
item. There's a clue.
Oh. Is it like Aladdin's lamp?
No. Remember, he found like its necklace. Because remember, he found like this statue he was disappointed with, and then it broke, and a necklace came out. And then he just gives that to Daisy at the end.
Oh.
Wait,
oh,
you remember that. It was a necklace.
The answer was
a necklace. Number 4. How many playable characters were in the original Street Fighter 2?
Now, I should know this. Do I have to sit here and count them out? Ryu, Ken, Chun-Li, M. Bison, Vega, E. Honda, Sagat, Guile, and Blanca. So that's 9. There's got to be one more I'm forgetting, I think. So I'll go with 10.
You're wrong. It's 8.
But I'd counted 9.
Vega.
Who did I count wrong?
Look, listen to me, okay? Vega, Balrog, M. Bison, and Sagat were boss characters in the original Street Fighter 2 and were not made playable until a later iteration.
Mother God. Balrog was a boss?
Yeah. They were all, like, kind of boss characters. Sorry. Yeah. So you can't win anymore, but you can still redeem yourself a bit. Get these next two right. Number 5. What is the second zone in Sonic the Hedgehog?
The original?
Yeah.
Oh, is it Colosseum Zone?
Colosseum Zone?
No.
I've never heard of anything called Colosseum.
I could picture it. I know you can picture it,
and it has columns and lava, but what's the name of the zone?
I should know this. I played the first 3 levels of that game over and over.
I know. Good Lord. I don't know.
All right. I got nothing.
Marble Zone.
Jeez!
Oh.
Ouch. All right, Ezra, here's the bonus question. What 3 islands were featured in Monkey Island 2? This is not counting Dinky or Monkey Island.
You're on Scarab, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm on the right track.
You had to ask me if that was right. You don't remember?
I mixed up the 2 games sometimes. Oh, God. Scarab,
What'd you say? Did you say Scarab?
No, Scab.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry, I'm...
Oh, God.
Shit.
I
can't remember. I'll just save everybody's time.
You can't remember?
I will as soon as you tell me.
Fat and Booty. Fat Booty at Scab Island. Oh, come on, FBI. I thought that was a gimme. Come on.
I know.
That was sad. I can't make it much easier, Edge Guy.
I know.
I can't make it much easier for you. I don't know what you want me to do.
I understand. You got the rupee question.
I got that, yeah.
You got the rupees, and he helped you out and got you the pimple one. You only got 2 in that one. That was supposed to be an easy one.
Oh, I know.
It was supposed to be easy.
What do you want from me?
I want you to win. Oh, my God. Okay. Why don't we move on to our weekend gaming?
Okay.
Okay, can I
talk about Resident Evil 5?
Yeah, let's talk about Resident Evil 5, because I beat it. And, you know, and it's... My opinions on the game are mixed. And I want to say right now, I have no problems with any of the gameplay elements, really. Okay. I don't even really mind that the game's been souped up for action. I don't really mind you can't shoot and move. But there's just a decline in degrees on almost every other aspect of the game for me. The environment is just not scary or all that interesting. You only spend about half the game in, like, the outdoors kind of typical...
Like the shanty towns.
Yeah, exactly. Having that partner there with you is just... It just kind of hurts. And I know co-op's probably more fun, but in single player, it's just kind of annoying that you have this other person who's not that smart, just kind of goes through ammo as soon as she gets it, isn't smart enough to combine items on her own, so you have to do that for her. So basically... You almost just kind of make her like a walking briefcase. She's a mule, basically.
Right.
To kind of carry your stuff around, and you hope she doesn't get herself killed.
So you weren't playing co-op?
No, I wasn't playing co-op. I might do that with Beige a bit later. I think that might be more enjoyable. But no, I was just playing through it by myself. Shava.
Is the story anything worth caring about?
I'm going to get to that, because no.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not, and that's what really disappointed me. I'll get to that right now, but no, the story was very... It just wasn't all that interesting. It didn't even seem to pick up... It didn't have much urgency even until about the 6th chapter, of which there are 6.
Although I did enjoy it. I was watching some clips on the latest episode of Co-op, and I believe the Team Fortress 2 scout made a cameo.
Does he?
I don't know, there's that guy who's like, you're just in time for the fireworks!
Yeah, no,
boom! I was like, it's the TF2 scout!
He doesn't sound like the TF2 scout. He's awesome.
He's got the same accent!
Oh, that guy's great, by the way. It was by far my favorite character, so I was very disappointed when he kind of disappeared much earlier. Every dialogue that guy had was in a trailer.
Really?
Which upset me, because I kind of fell in love with him in the trailers, but he had nothing else to say.
Well, that sucks.
So that... And the story... The thing that upset me the most is that in Chapter 5, there is what I want to call the most fucking obvious plot twist ever. Which upset me so freaking much. Let me just say this, okay? There is a girl missing that you're looking for. There is also a girl, a mysterious girl, walking around with her face hidden. They have the audacity that when they reveal the identity of the second girl, for me to be, to think that I would be surprised by her identity.
Slight spoiler warning.
Do they do like zoom in and like flash freeze on her face?
It was like, here's the big reveal. And I was like, I was literally upset by how little they thought of me. Never mind that, like, the moment right before the reveal was in the trailers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, what
do you... Why do people keep doing that? I hate that.
Yeah, Metal Gear Solid had a problem with that, too, is showing too much off in the trailers. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, what do they think I'm gonna think? There is no other female character in the game except the one they're talking about and the one who's by my side. Now, I know it's not the one by my side, because she's right there. So I've eliminated that possibility. It just annoyed me. It annoyed me. I'm like, okay, Bioshock, this ain't. And also, Wesker's back. And Wesker...
See, this is... I don't even know who Wesker is.
He's the main bad guy of Resident Evil.
This shows you how little I know slash care about Resident Evil. Well, apparently, he's like the most important character.
Well, here's the thing that was great about Resident Evil 4, right? Not only was Resident Evil 4 kind of dropped all of the gameplay elements of the first Resident Evils, it just completely decided, like, okay, screw all that bizarre story we had going on with all these plot twists and, you know, because the story just kept getting more and more complicated because they kept wanting to make sequels. And even though loose ends got tied up, they had to make it more complicated. So Resident Evil 4 just, like, forget all of that. No Umbrella, no Wesker, no Spencer, none of that stuff. No T-Virus, no G-Virus, no T-Veronica virus, none of that. It's this new thing. We're in Europe. Don't worry about it. And, like, and Wesker was, like, kind of operating in the background, but you weren't, it was never really brought up that much. Now, this game, it plays like Resident Evil 4, but all of that previous shit is getting mixed back in there.
Yeah.
So it's all constantly like, there's this guy from here, and remember when this guy did this, and this was, and here's the progenitor virus, and oh my god, and so it's just all that shit's back. And Wesker is not, it's like the Japanese just got the first Matrix ported over there, and they think it's still cool. Because Wesker is basically Agent Smith.
Oh.
He talks in that very dry voice, he's always wearing sunglasses, and he has like that trench coat, and he dodges bullets a lot.
Well, good.
And it's like, oh yeah, this was really cool in 1999, guys. there's just some other things. Sheva is not a stereotypical black person. She's a stereotypical sidekick, which is much worse. All she fucking does is repeat things that people say, but in the form of a question. I have acquired the progenitor virus. The progenitor virus, yes. With it, I shall make the Las Plagas more powerful than ever. The Las Plagas, yes. I started a new company called Tricell. Tricell? This is on and on and on. Never mind that she's not voice acted particularly well either. All the dialogue is not that, no. It's nothing to write home about.
That was amazing.
But they also decided to add too many boss fights. Just way too many. And I mean, there's only so many times you can see the giant, like, tentacle monster thing and get excited about it.
Yeah, I saw the commercial, I saw that, and I saw, like, the cave troll from Lord of the Rings again. I'm like, weren't they both in the fourth game?
Yeah. They kind of at least... That cave troll one was kind of interesting, but it was like one of those things where you're on a turret. So it's a pretty easy boss fight.
Yeah.
The game does that thing for me where, including the last boss even, although the last boss was fine, but my problem with it is it's boss fights, it's where it's more of a pattern, dodge, here's the weak spot, attack that for a bit, okay, dodge, do some things to make the weak spot appear. And I personally always prefer boss fights where it's more of like, look, this guy's got his attacks, you got your attacks, he's got no weak spot, you just gotta hit him, try to kill him before he kills you.
Right.
Like, you know, it's more Super Metroid as opposed, in like, even Zelda. as opposed to, something like Resident Evil 5 or, any other game that has, like, the blatant weak spot bosses, which most games really do, and I've never been a fan of. There was a old Squadron of Shame inspired topic on the old radio boards, which was, it was called The Duel, and it was talking about the boss fights where it's more of, like, just someone who's comparable to you and you just fight them. And I think some people thought that that meant, like, they had to be, like, the same size, but not necessarily. They can still be huge, like Mother Brain. It was just more of an equal fight.
I agree.
It's like fighting a big daddy in Bioshock, you don't wait for his you don't wait for his helmet to come down to expose the glowing red weak spot.
Right. That's a good example. Yeah.
Right. So I always enjoy things like that more. But, like I said, the gameplay, it's still fun to play. I have no problems with the gameplay. But, I was pretty excited for Resident Evil 5, and I was kind of hoping for it to be special like Resident Evil 4. Resident Evil 4 is a special game. I love that game, and you don't think about, like, Resident Evil 4 had a good story and stuff like that, because you don't think that it was all that spectacular. But you can see how just a better, a decent story can kind of help out. Because, I mean, Resident Evil 5 is just missing so much, there doesn't seem to be much motivation, and I don't understand exactly why these guys are doing it, other than the fact that they just, are such good people, and they're just so compelled to. And it's just not as interesting. Like I said, Resident Evil 4, at least it was like, well, go save the president's daughter. And then things got complicated, and it was all tied within that one game. And here, all the complications stem from all this previous crap that I don't really care about.
All right.
I've only played the demo, and it was just, I just got fed up. But I've heard that that the game itself is a lot easier than the demo.
The demo has the two hardest parts of the game in it. I'm not even joking. The demo includes the only two parts of the game where there are enemies. There's like maybe one other time where like that chainsaw guy shows up, but it's the only two parts of the game where there are enemies that can literally one hit kill you. And I don't know why and this is only in the beginning of the game. The difficulty curve is just weird because the game starts off really hard because you only have like your one pistol. There's all these enemies that are way too powerful. You don't get any ammo. And then like as things go on, those powerful enemies just don't show up anymore. You have much better weapons. It's just weird. Because, everyone who's played that demo thinks that Resident Evil 5 is a hard game, and rightfully so, because that those demos, those levels from the demo are hard, because the first one you have the Executioner, who has this giant axe thing, and then the other one has the Chainsaw Guy. And, I don't know, it's not as hard as the demo makes it out to be, which is just a weird choice on their parts. There are way too many enemies, though, like the Chainsaw Guy and like the Executioner. They just take way too many hits to die, really.
Yeah, that's my other thing, too. It's like, God, how many times do I have to shoot this guy in the head with a sniper rifle before he goes down?
Right, exactly. It gets a little out of hand sometimes.
All right, well, did you play anything else?
We played MLB The Show.
Oh, yeah, we did play. We could talk about that.
Which I also picked up. Being that it's a good baseball game.
It's phenomenal. I haven't played a good baseball game like that in a long time.
Right. Part of my motivation for I finally kind of went through and was like, okay, I'm going to beat Resident Evil 5 because I need to do my homework and not worry about it. And I really wanted to start getting into some of the single-player modes of the show. Like, the season, and there's also that Road to the Show thing where you just make you make a player, and you kind of start him off in the minors, and you can get him all the way to the majors and play with just that one guy. But me and you played a game, and it's great, and, we commented how, the score and stuff, it was like a very real baseball game.
Yeah, the pace was like an actual baseball game. We weren't like hitting a million home runs and all this nonsense.
Right, I mean, we both played good pitchers, so, there weren't very many hits or runs. I think it was, we were actually tied 1-1 until we got to like the 12th inning, and then you kind of exploded finally, and you got your
runs. I hit a home run.
Yeah, so I wasn't able to catch back up with you. But
I played with Monday Morning before I left home. It lets you, what I always say sports games should do, and the last one that did was ESPN Football 2K5. You can pull the MP3s on your hard drive into the game, and then for every individual player, you can give them their walk-up music, their home run music, if it's a pitcher, their reliever music, and you can record, I didn't do this yet, you can record custom taunts for individual players.
Right, I heard about that.
I fully intend the next time I'm over to hook up the mic and for Kevin Euclid shout, "You're the bad guy from Rookie of the League of the Year," and that way that'll shout from the crowd.
No,
he's up to bat.
No, the cheer should just be "Float it."
Yes.
Float it.
But it was sweet. Like, I set it up so that every time Hafner came up to bat, it started playing, like, the Imperial March.
Oh, man, that's pretty cool.
It was sweet.
See, that'd be great for, like, your custom character to get stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, totally. At. Absolutely. Just to give us, like more of that you flair to it, you know?
I definitely want Hafner to have wrestling music. Probably there Batista's entrance theme. But there's just all these great customizable things. And just the game mechanics themselves are great. If you were looking for a baseball game, like mine, I have not played the other one. But from everything I've read, this one is by far superior to it.
Well, what this game does well is, like, I think 2K is trying to complicate it too much in the name of realism with, like, all these weird pitching meters they have. And you have to, like, swing the bat with the right stick. But no, MLB 09 just takes, like, the tried and true gameplay conventions of, like, the golf meter for pitching and just hitting the button to swing the bat, and it just works really well. Really well.
Okay, what else do you play?
Let's see. Not a ton more. I do have a duo of iPhone games to talk about, but they're actual games.
Did you get Metal Gear Solid 4?
No.
The Metal Gear Solid Touch?
No,
well, you didn't?
Getting that.
Oh, I kind of want to hear what
is that out already?
Yeah, it came out
like a day early. It came out on Thursday or Wednesday or whatever. It's Duck Hunt with 2D sprites from Metal Gear.
Yeah,
it's not the whole game yet.
There were people on Twitter that were like, "So are we obligated to support this as hardcore gamers?" And
I was like, "Absolutely not."
No.
Nope. But I did get. They released the iPhone version of Oregon Trail, which is, like,
how's
one of the greatest
work?
Games of all time. It's awesome.
Oh, really?
I mean,
cool.
It's much more mainstream. Like, you know, you're not like in the old school one where you're like, I need this many pounds of flour and this many pounds of bacon and stuff like that. I mean, you just buy food. And, like, every activity is basically broken down to a mini game. There's the fishing mini game, the hunting, the wagon repair, but they're all actually pretty good. The game has a really cool art style. It's funny.
But like, I don't know. We played that in like, fourth grade computer class. And, I haven't bought it, but I feel like the game just loses something without those old school, like, pixelated graphics, you know?
It does, but it gains some stuff too. Like, the game is very charming. Like, I mean, they just imbue all these little bits of personality and everything. Like, as soon as I started, like, I literally hit the go button and, like, started the trail. And right away, my son is going with little word bubbles over his head. Are we there yet? My wife, no. Are we there yet? No. Are we there yet? Yes. Liar. Like, just little crap like that pops up all throughout the game. It's hilarious. It's really well done. It's a very good, solid game. Also, released this week is a game called Geo Defense, which it's another tower defense game with the aesthetic of Geometry Wars, and it's really good. Like, it's just, I don't know what it is about it that makes it better than any other one, but it's good. Works really well. Looks fantastic. And it's 99 cents, so if you have an iPhone, you should definitely get that game. I also played the demo just today for Guitar Hero Metallica to check it out.
How'd that go? You don't like Metallica, though.
Well, my thing is, Metallica, the music's fine. Playing it is boring as shit, because there's four songs in this demo. Two of them are Metallica songs. I didn't know either of them. The first song I played was some Alice in Chains song that, again, I didn't know. It was pretty good. I'm playing this song. I'm like, hey, this is pretty sweet. It's a good song. The note tracking's cool. And, like, they have this new, I don't know if this is in World Tour or not. I never came across it. But it's like, you have to hold down, like, the green fret to sustain a note there while you continue playing on the other frets, which
I thought
was kind of cool.
World Tour.
Okay. Then I get to the Metallica song. And, like, this is what every Metallica song is that I've played in these games. Because, like you listen to it, it sounds fine. When you're playing it, you're on, like, you know, the meat of the song, which is the same very easy rhythm repeated over and over forever and ever, and it's boring. Then you get to some absolutely impossible solo, and then you're back to the boring part, and the song ends. Like, that's what this song did. And I was like, I didn't even finish the song. When I got to, like, the repetitious part at the end, I just turned it off. I was like, I know what happens. So, I don't know. And just the whole philosophy still that, like, if I'm playing Guitar Hero World Tour, and I'm like, I want to play this Metallica song, I have to take out that game, put in another game, reset everything back up, play that song, and then if I want to go back to something else, I got to do that again. Why can't I just import these all to the hard drive and play them?
You done.
The last thing I played that I'll mention quickly, because I know you hate it, I've been playing a lot of Oblivion lately. Ugh. For some reason.
That game came out, get over it. That was 3 years ago. Christ.
And it's still awesome, because here's why. I finished that game too. Oh, screw you
both. High five.
Listen, I played through the Mage's Guild questline, which is actually really sweet. Practically a game unto itself. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do the Thieves Guild and the Dark Brotherhood, because I never did those. So I made a new character who's like a bow and arrow thief. And it's like, it's awesome, because it's like, it's a different game. You play it completely differently this way. I mean, you're right, 3 years later, and I'm still playing this game hours on end, and it's awesome. So, ha.
Okay, that's great. Are you done?
I'm done.
Can we get Scribble to say what he played?
Well, so you played Geodefense, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not a big, like, tower defense guy or anything, but I've been just hooked on Field Runners.
Yes.
It's like, I mean, I don't really know the genre, so I don't know if it does anything new or whatever, but it just, you know, it was cheap, and I've just been, you know, it's a great podcast game. I was listening to like one of yours the other night and just
playing
Field
up.
Runners. Yeah, listen up. Same deal. But yeah, I just, you know, it's got like three maps, and I'm still like, I just play on the first one, because the second one has like guys coming out of different gates and other gates closing and opening, and I don't know where they're going. And so I just play easy on the first map, and it's great. It's great.
I haven't played, there's a third map they released. I haven't actually played it yet, but it's like, well, what the big difference is between Field Runners and Geodefense? Field Runners is the school of tower defense game where, it's just, they come out a gate and go to a gate in a straight line, and you kind of create the path they take by where you place your towers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just as much as the line you're going to make them take is what you're building. Whereas Geodefense and like Final Fantasy, the Crystal Chronicles one they did, the enemies have a predefined path they follow, and you build along that path. And that's also what Pixel Junk Monsters does.
Right.
So those are like the two philosophies of design in tower defense games. So I feel like with Geodefense and Field Runners, if you have like the two of those, you have like the two definitive tower defense games on the iPhone.
Okay, yeah. Because I played Pixel Junk Monsters, which is I played the demo, which is the only other experience I have with that genre. And, you know, so Field Runners was like new to me.
Right.
And then, yeah, I mean, I'm honestly not going to get to play much like console games this weekend just because it's March Madness and my TV is just.
I saw your setup on Twitter. It was very impressive.
It's ridiculous. We have, we have a TV in the common room, and then two of my friends moved their TVs out there also, and we hooked up their computers to it. So we have like three basketball games going on at all times.
Nice.
And we just like have this like, we just dance around with the audio switching on and switching off.
I pictured you guys dancing for some reason as you said that. Woo, basketball.
I'll tweet that also. But but it's okay because I just got GTA Chinatown Wars.
Oh, good. Oh, talk about
that's
that.
Right. How is that? I heard really good things.
It's a lot of fun, actually. Like, I'm actually probably enjoying it more than I enjoy GTA 4.
No, that was going to be my next question. Do tell.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's just I don't know. I want to like the driving in GTA 4 so much, but it's just so cumbersome.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like cumbersome, but at the same time, you hit a curb and your car will do a, like 720 in the air.
Right.
You know, it's very strange and hard for me to get a handle on. Whereas like, you know, GTA Chinatown Wars is very much, and they have like all these driving assists that will help keep you going straight down the road. But you can still, you know, you're still weaving in and out of cars, and there's no like, there's barely any physics or driving physics to it or anything like that. So, I mean, it's a lot of fun. The aiming and guns and stuff on foot is a little awkward, but, it's all right. But I mean, also like it uses a ton of like, of touchscreen stuff, like little mini game things. Like you'll get into a car and you'll need to hotwire it sometimes. So you have to take out your stylus, unscrew the panel and then, like connect the two wires and tighten them together, or there's just little things like there'll be dumpsters around the city where you can just pick up a weapon and you'll have to, you know, just take out the stylus, open the dumpster, throw the garbage away and pick out your weapon. And it uses the stylus so much, which is great, except that it also uses all the other buttons.
So you're like going back and forth.
I sort of
always kind of annoying.
I sort of keep it like half popped into the DS holder slot and then like have to quickly pop it out. And then, cause like, you know, you're jacking a car and the alarm is about to go off and you need to do it quickly. So you're like switching back all the time. And the DS touchscreen isn't quite like ready for you to use your thumb on it, so which is always a frustration. But yeah, I mean, I could talk a little about, I mean, some of it, like the dialogue, the writing's pretty good, but it loses a bit of its charm when it's not voice acted, you know?
Right.
Like, it sort of is walking that typical, like, GTA tightrope between, like, taking itself very seriously and then, like, joking around and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's a little hard to, like, get the nuances when it's written. Plus, it does that, like, typical, in terms of the story, it does that typical, like, GTA open world game nonsense stuff where it's just, like, fully filled with fluff. Like, the first hour is just, like, go pick up my laundry, go, like, intimidate these guys, go sell some drugs.
I wish that they would just assume, like, that we understand the basic mechanics of GTA at this point. Like, yeah, we know we're going to be driving and shooting. You don't have to introduce this to us slowly.
Yeah, yeah. And, but it does, like, there's, I mean, even besides, like, introducing us to the gameplay slowly, it's like, you get there, I don't even know, I'm not really paying attention that much, but, you play as this guy who, his father was just killed, by, like, I guess drug dealers or something, and he gets to Liberty City, and he's ambushed off the plane, and he gets shot in the head, and then these thugs, you know, bail out of this car and leave you drowning in the ocean, and you have to break out of that, and they stole your sacred family sword, and then you finally, you know, you get out of the hospital, and you meet up with your uncle, who's like a drug lord in Liberty City, and you're like, oh, fuck, I gotta go kill those guys, I gotta avenge my dad, and he's like, yeah, that's great, why don't you, you know, just go kill a few of these thugs over here. And it's like, it's just like, there's so much setup for the story, and it's just like, everything's just put on hold for like a few hours.
See, I hate to, like, that was my thing with San Andreas. Like, I can't accept the plot in GTA where I'm out for like the revenge of the murder of a family member. When you're driving around just mowing people down left and right. Like, it may be cool if, like, someone, like, came along and shot you, and as you're lying there bleeding, it's like, that's for running my dad over with your car, and then it's like, game over.
Would it be cool? Yeah. I bet you would hate that, actually. Actually, but I know what you mean. I know what you mean, though.
Yeah.
It's the same problem I have with Nico being sympathetic, but at the same time, pretty much being a total bastard.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I feel like I can take it less seriously on the handheld, and that's kind of why I'm interested in this Chinatown
Wars. With the cartoony style.
Right. It's been just getting stellar reviews, so I am kind of intrigued, and I appreciate you talking about it, Scribble.
Yeah, I mean, the game looks beautiful, and you definitely, like, there's definitely not the same sympathy. Like, I know what you guys are talking about with Nico, but there's, you know, it's all cartoony and top down, so you don't really, like, care that much when you run, like, a little stick figure guy over on your screen.
I think that helped the first Grand Theft Auto 3, in that your character really didn't talk and didn't have much of a personality, so you didn't really care what he did.
Right.
Yeah. It just bugs me that, like, you'll be in a cutscene with your uncle, Crime Lord, and the main character's like, yeah, so when are we gonna, like, get around to, you know, avenging my dad and getting back the sword and everything? And he's like, it's just a stupid sword, which is pretty funny, but then it's just like, yeah, go pick up my laundry and pick up, you know, I need some groceries done and stuff. And it's like, I just hate how the story is totally, you know, the main plot that seems pretty urgent is just, like, totally put on hold for these minor little errands.
Right. That kind of reminds me of Shenmue again, where it's like, you know, who killed my father? I must avenge him, but first I'm going to play with this cat.
Yeah, and these toys.
Right. Hey guys, I hate to interrupt for a second, but we kind of, breaking news, Bioshock 2 is going to be on all three platforms at once, according to a 2K spokesperson. This is through Kotaku.
Oh, cool. Great. I'm kind of not surprised, but alright.
Right, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay.
I hope I hope that's this year. I hope that's this year. Bad.
I think it is.
It better be. So.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, we good?
Yeah, that's all I'm playing. All
right.
All
right.
Thanks. Let's go.
Okay, H-Guy, what are the downloadable game releases?
On the WiiWares, Bit Trip Beat.
It's never heard of it.
Rhythm game. See, that's the thing. Like,
there's no build up for any of these.
I've heard some good things about this, but you're right. There's no build up. Like, I just see Bit Trip Beat in all caps. I'm like, I don't care. And there's no demo, so I have no way of knowing if this is any good or not. Uh-huh. Maybe it is. Virtual Console Summer Games 2 for the Commodore 64, which was on the list of games recommended to me by some of the squad guys.
Yeah.
But I tried to emulate a C64. It doesn't work. Like, it doesn't accept the control inputs, except for one game worked. So I don't know what
the
deal is.
That's why you gotta get Virtual Console games.
I guess. Okay. Xbox Live Arcade. Now, this is dickish. So we all knew that, like, Hasbro Family Game Night was coming out this week, and it had four games, Battleship, Scrabble, Connect 4, and Yahtzee. What they didn't tell us until after it launched is, like, the Hasbro Family Game Night download, it's free. It's like a hub. Then from there, you download these games individually at $10 a pop.
Yeah.
I'll be damned if I'm going to pay $10 for Connect 4.
Oh, you can go
right to hell, Hasbro.
I mean,
you and Mr. Potato Head. I mean, my God. If for you to get all four of these games, it's $40. Who the hell is going to pay $40 for this shit?
Were you really, like, excited for Connect 4? Like, was that your, like, big moment of the
week?
No,
but, like, I was thinking $10 for Battleship, Scrabble, Connect 4, and Yahtzee with some new game modes and all. That's not bad. $10 each? Hell no. I could play Scrabble on Facebook right now for free.
I actually played Battleship with my friend on paper in class.
Yeah.
In accounting class.
There's no reason for this to be $10. Unless it's got, like, the world's best graphics or something that I don't know about. I don't know.
You can easily do Connect 4 on paper with just X's and circles.
Yeah, it's stupid. So there's that. Then on the PlayStation Network for the PS3, we've got Wheel of Fortune. So,
okay.
You know, yay. And on the PSP, they got a port of Luxor, which is kind of like Zuma, I believe.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And then on Good Old Games, we have four new games this week. Apache vs. Havoc. Jack Orlando, a cinematic adventure, which is, I looked at some screens. It's like a point-and-click adventure game set in the 30s, hard-boiled detective. Look kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Earth 2140 Trilogy. It's one of the original 3D RTS series. And Blake Stone Planet Strike, which is an Apogee first-person shooter.
Still no Anachronox.
Yep.
I want Anachronox.
I know.
All right,
who published
right.
that game?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
What's for reals?
Okay, well, as Scribble brought up, Chinatown Wars, the Grand Theft Auto game for DS, came out. Again, getting just amazing reviews. It's weird how the Nintendo DS Grand Theft Auto seems to be getting more recognition than the PSP ones did.
Well, because they were just the PS2 ones, and it, like, probably improperly put on the PSP,
yeah,
where
yeah.
this is built from the ground up for the DS.
Right.
Yeah.
The other big handheld game was Resistance Retribution for the PSP.
Uh-huh.
Tom Clancy's Hawks made a PC appearance, as does Grand Ages of Rome. Valkyrie Profile Covenant of the Plume came out for the DS.
I didn't know they were making one for the DS.
Yeah, there it is. And Suikoden Tear... God damn it.
Tearcrace.
What the hell are these words?
Tearcrace? I don't know.
For the DS.
I think it's pronounced Suikoden, if we're being proper.
Okay, thank you. Man of War for the PC. Rune Factory Frontier for Wii. Ready to Rumble Revolution came out for the Wii. How about that? That
I
game.
I missed that.
I never realized that was... Is that a series that really needed a comeback? We'll see. Henry Hatsworth and the Puzzling Adventure for the DS.
Which is supposed to be good.
Pro Evolution Soccer 2009 for Wii and PS3. And World in Conflict Complete Edition for the PC.
All right,
so let's get over to...
Complete Edition, what else is there?
Yeah. let's get over to Derek Robbins' top 10 list. This is... thank you, Asgard, for that link. Oh, that was for Scribble's sake. That makes sense.
Yes.
So this is the top 10 most unusual things of the Resident Evil franchise. I want to bring up real quick that he, in his intro, he kind of brings up, and he's kind of like me, where he likes Resident Evil 5, but, you know, there's just, he has problems with it. He brings up a thing where, especially in the later parts of the game really becomes even more action-y like. Like, there's a, like, after a while, there's more people with guns start appearing to fight, and, like, there's pretty much a cover system input in the game. Where it's all contextual, but just all of a sudden, like, almost every wall and thing you can hide behind has, like, the push X for cover kind of thing. And, like, it works okay, but it's just, you know, it's just different.
I don't understand something about RE5. Apparently there are zombies that ride motorcycles.
Yeah, that's a little weird. Although they're not zombies. With the Lost... I think they have all their motor skills with Las Plagas, which is whatever they're infected with.
Uh-huh.
I feel lame.
It seems like a big leap. Like, you know, we went from zombies shambling slowly to running, sprinting, and now motorcycles.
And operating heavy machinery.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. it is a. Let me just say that's the least of my worries with the game. Okay, so number 10 is, wait, there are more than one game in a Survivor series?
Are these the light gun ones?
Well, no, what he just means by that is that, you know, the whole point of the game is to survive, and you kind of keep surviving, I think. Let me see this before.
No, he's talking about there was Resident Evil Survivor, there was the light gun games.
Yeah, I know. Is that what he's actually talking about here?
Yeah.
Oh, well, those weren't very good, I understand.
No.
Because I don't think anyone liked those. Okay, moving on. Number 9, Everything Must Explode. Which, yeah, including cities.
Yeah, you'll have that.
There's like an oil refinery in Resident Evil 5. You'll never guess what happens to that.
Blows up?
No. Number 8, Love Blooms in Strange Places. Which is always kind of a video game cliche in general. But yeah, you always have that. Number 7 is Characters That Will Not Die. Including Wesker, who's been blown up. And shot at him a lot of times. And he always manages to come back. 6 is Alfred Ashford, which was, he was in Resident Evil Code Veronica, so you might know more about him than me, AJ.
I don't remember much about that game.
Well, he was there. 5 is Salazar's statue from Resident Evil 4, which I also don't remember very much about. But, I don't have anything to add to that. I wish I could remember more. 4 is Moonlight Sonata, which is just, you know, the song. And I guess it kind of shows up. People playing and stuff. 3 is William Birkin's role in Resident Evil 2. Didn't play Resident Evil 2. 2 is just logistics, which is, you know, always a thing with the puzzles and why are these puzzles here and stuff.
Yeah.
Which pretty much just have disappeared at this point in the series. And 1 is just Resident Evil 0 story in general, which I have not played. So, there's that. Thank you for that, Derek. And thanks for the plug. And that brings us to the end of the show, everybody.
Alright.
So, I want to thank you all for listening.
Yes, Craig, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No problem. That was an excellent time we had there. Good yes. stuff. I'm glad I kind of got my Resident Evil 5 rant off my chest. But it's still worth saying, I still like the game. I think actually even this weekend I might be playing it with Beige Co-ops to see what that's like.
All right.
So, thanks for listening, everybody. You can find more about us at squadronofshame.com as well as explodingbarrel.wordpress.com, which I actually just kind of had to redesign a little bit because.
Nice job, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. We still had the presented by 411.
Yeah, we didn't realize that was there.
So we got rid of that, and so that's been fixed up a bit. You can also see us at the iTunes Music Store. You can contact me at real quick. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Exploding Barrel. Twitter.com/Exploding Barrel. Follow us.
Yep.
And you can contact me at tolkoto@gmail.com.
No, you did it again.
Tokoto@SquadronOfShame.com.
Yes. And I'm AdgeGuy@SquadronOfShame.com.
I don't know if I have one of those fancy new SOS addresses yet, but I guess you can find me on Twitter. I'm SCRIBL. Scribble.
All right.
Thanks again, Scribble, for joining us, and thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week. Goodbye.